This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. You know where I'm from. I'm Frank Stacio, and there is a new batch of lawmakers in Raleigh. They were sworn in last week, and they bring significant changes to the North Carolina General Assembly. Wake and Mecklenburg counties now have no Republican representatives in the House and only two Republican senators between them. Nearly 40 new representatives start work for the long session in 2 weeks. Meanwhile, the 9th Congressional District remains in electoral limbo as election fraud scandal unfolds involving Republican candidate in that race. But the GOP continues to apply pressure to get their disputed candidate into Congress. Plus, journalists are feeling the crunch at the legislature, where they may be pushed out of their centrally located press room to the far reaches of the basement. And the new basement dweller would be among them, Jeff Tiberi, WUNC's Capitol Bureau Chief. Jeff, welcome.
Dizzy yet?
You got your little headlamp for when you get your... We'll get to the new digs in a minute, but let's talk about this new batch of lawmakers now as the long session is about to start. What do they look like?
This is a group that is more diverse in the sense there are more women now going to be serving in the 170 of the 170 legislators. There are two Muslims in the legislature that was just sworn in a week ago today. I believe there are more African Americans, or that might be status quo. It's a slightly more diverse body. Mm-hmm. There are nearly 40 folks that are new to their posts. And as you mentioned, one of the biggest changes appears to be in the urban areas. As we think about Wake and Mecklenburg counties, there are 33 legislative seats from those two areas, and now just two are Republicans. So in thinking about the change, there really was a blue wave in the two most populous states, populous counties in the state. But it's also important to note that some of the lawmakers that were serving in those districts, just to mention two, Nelson Dollar, a House Republican from Wake County, and Bill Brawley, a Republican from Mecklenburg County in the House, they're gone. And those were some powerful voices. Dollar was a lead budget writer in the House. So there's a lot of change within those main urban areas. At the top, Phil Berger will again lead the Senate. Tim Moore is again going to lead the House. And, the majority leaders and the rules chairman beneath those two leaders will remain steady, but plenty of change in the rank and file.
And in terms of the power dynamic, and we've talked about this before, I want to take a look at now what it might mean for legislative priorities. The fact that the Republicans no longer have a supermajority, they're not veto-proof, and there's a Democratic governor who's likely to veto much of their or some of their legislation.
The last time the table was effectively set this way was in 2010 and 11, when there was a Democratic governor, Beverly Perdue, and Republican majorities, but not supermajorities in both chambers. In that two-year stretch, the governor vetoed 19 pieces of legislation, 11 of which were overridden, more than half. Mm. And that was largely because of, a faction, the support of Democratic rural lawmakers. There aren't so many Democratic rural lawmakers anymore. So it's going to be interesting to see if there are, if there's a faction of the Democratic Party that emerges and will move to help the Republicans override gubernatorial vetoes in the next 2 years. There doesn't seem to be an obvious candidate for how that would happen. Or does the Republican leadership, the Republicans not put forth bills, as many bills that are going to be vetoed in the next couple of years? At the same time, from the Republican perspective, I think that they are in some ways hopeful that this is going to get the governor to have to play a little bit more offense. He can't just play defense anymore. They're going to try to get him on the record with some of his positions, whether it's Medicaid or funding for education, so on and so forth. So it's an interesting dynamic. I think it's going to be a fascinating couple of years, and the horse trading that gets done and what does get done. One of the big questions is consensus or gridlock, and I think it's going to depend largely on the issue at hand. I think we're going to see both depending on what's at stake.
And then let's talk a little bit more about the dynamics involved here. The Republicans, looking back over two election cycles, having lost the governor's race in 2016 in a statewide referendum on the Republican Party, and then election results in 2018, again, you talk about some of the more extreme legislation that they got through with a veto-proof majority. Are we likely to see a taming of that kind of legislation, a dampening of that sort of thing? And on the other side, again, the Democrats don't have a majority in either house, but will they promote their own legislation and push it, or are they going to sit on the sidelines as they did when they had the veto-proof majority in the opposition party?
I think that we are far less likely to see particularly combustible, particularly contentious, controversial legislation, because I don't think the leadership is going to let it get to the floor, because the governor is going to veto it, and then it's going to come back their way, and they're not going to have the votes to override it. As for Democrats, I think you're going to see a lot of them championing their proposals for Medicaid, for raising the minimum wage, for independent redistricting. Those are also things that we're going to hear from the Republicans on, specifically independent redistricting and Medicaid. I would expect Democrats to position themselves to try to have a louder voice. Whether or not it leads anywhere remains to be seen.
And of course, 2020 is still looming large in everybody's playbook. As they think about those elections coming up, there'll be a presidential race. A lot of people, more people, we assume, going to the polls. Talk about this rural-urban split and the change in that dynamic. Rural areas are overrepresented in American politics, owing a large part to gerrymandering. We've seen that in national maps, and it in terms of the population centers, that's true. Economic engines in the state of North Carolina are the urban areas. They're also the progressive areas. They're the places with the most diversity and the places that tend to be under attack by the Republican conservative majority that represents mostly rural areas that still languishes, and as it has since 2010 and before when the Republicans took office. Can Democrats make progress on this and say, take a look at these districts? Nothing much has happened here since you've been in power, and these are the people controlling those particular districts.
Wise, seasoned folks, both reporters and policy experts, have said to me, the effort to prop up eastern North Carolina is not a new effort. This is something that lawmakers have been trying to do for 50 years. And Democrats and Republicans have not found a path to really propping them up, right? I think that if you were to make that point or raise that issue there, I think that you would hear from some conservatives who say, you know, unemployment is down in rural areas, and there have been job announcements, there have been some economic improvements in these rural areas. I've spoken with several lawmakers who say, you know, their window, they feel their window to continue to try to improve the life in eastern North Carolina, the window's closing, because as the populations continue to grow in urban areas, effectively it tips at some point, whether that's 2020 or 2024 or 2026, you're going to have a majority of lawmakers who are from urban areas. And then regardless of party affiliation, the voice and those from Wayne County and Rockingham County, it is diminished, and perhaps they just don't have leverage anymore.
Let's talk about some of those changes. Please. You mentioned that Nelson Dollar, who was a longtime Republican from Wake County, not in office, but he's got a good job. He ended up okay.
He does. You lose an election, you get $117,000 staff gig with the Speaker. That's a great landing spot as far as I'm concerned. If I get canned and someone offered me $117,000, I'd feel okay about it. Representative Dollar was a seven-term incumbent in the House, one of the more powerful folks in that chamber. And I would, by his own admission, he's a policy guy. He's a policy wonk. So he's going to get to work behind the scenes now on policy. He doesn't have to deal with some of the political theater and the nonsense. And I think, he has not explicitly said this to me, but my expectation would be that he will probably take a shot somewhere down the line at running for office elsewhere, whether it's in the legislature or somewhere else. So I think this is a pretty good landing spot for him.
Let's talk about Raleigh Democrat Allison Dahl, one of the new faces who's shaking up the General Assembly. Tell us her story. Remind us.
Allison Dahl got into the race very late during filing season last year. She challenged Dwayne Hall, who was accused of inappropriate sexual behavior. She defeated him, and not narrowly, it's not in front of me, maybe by 40, 42 points in the primary. She thumped the incumbent in a primary, somebody who had aspirations of running for statewide office someday. And I've spent some time with her. I did a story on her last spring in advance of that primary. She's a gregarious and outgoing personality. She is a middle-aged woman. She's a lesbian. She has a nose ring. She has a streak of purple hair. She does not quite fit the status quo of the General Assembly, male or female, R or D.
All right, we'll get to two more stories in the last 2.5 minutes here. House Speaker Tim Moore facing another ethics complaint. He is the Speaker of the House, and he's got a couple of complaints against him.
There are several questions that have been raised, complaints that have been levied against him. One deals with he's an attorney by trade, so one deals with a job he took after a land development deal in Durham moved forward, there was an ethical question there, and there's still a non-criminal inquiry, a non-criminal investigation being played out by the Wake County District Attorney Lauren Freeman. The other one that you mentioned is in relation to a plot of land that he bought and was flipping. And before he could sell it, there was some question about some gas tanks on the property. There was a gas leak with one, and eventually DEQ, the Department of Environmental Quality, a state agency, effectively, you know, gave approval, gave the necessary thumbs up in order for him to sell it. And it was uncovered in an article by the News and Observer that there had been a call placed to DEQ, which is a government, an executive agency, on behalf of the speaker. Ultimately, and the speaker said this to us last week on the floor, that complaint was waived. They found him not to have violated anything, violated any ethical issue on that. So we thought it was I thought it was fully adjudicated, so to speak, or over. But a complaint has been raised again by
new emails
by this group from Washington D.C. The speaker, for his part, he had called this an election year attack when it emerged last year. So we have not heard word yet from him on this latest iteration of this.
Finally, the next time you hear word, you may be in the basement of the legislature and not mingling among the lawmakers anymore.
That is correct. The press is set to move to the basement for the first time in the 56-year history of the building. It would reduce square footage by about 25%. The press, as it presently stands, will have an area outside of the Senate chamber. Press is not in support of this move. It is something that we've tried to work through and negotiate.
Up there used to be able to mingle. The guys would, the lawmakers, male and female, would come and mingle with you, and now you're going to be in the basement.
We'll be in the basement, and I don't think we're going to have as many visitors, be those lawmakers, staff,
why are they doing that?
Municipal folks. The reason we've been given after a couple months of pestering is they need meeting space for legislators within the building.
Jeff Tiberi, WNC Capital Bureau Chief. Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome.
You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. We'll talk about Latinx voting next. Stay tuned.